Imagination is a gift and a tool for building a better world. We usually associate it with things like possibility, creativity, playfulness, and learning. We use it to create and manifest beauty, freedom, and justice. We use it to live into our dreams, to become a better version of ourselves. Imagination is fun and a means to save the world all at once, a delight and a blessing that inspires and liberates. But imagination also has a shadow side, anxiety. Some even refer to anxiety as the misuse of imagination. Anxiety is imagination off the rails, a wild train of uncontrollable thinking which twists our insides up in knots, fills us with fear, and ushers in a flood of negative thinking. I suppose we all know what it feels like. Your heart starts to race, you know the feeling. Your palms are sweaty, breathing is suddenly much more difficult. And when it gets really bad, a sense of doom settles in. Sometimes we need these sensations. A racing pulse and a rush of adrenaline, that keen sense of awareness that you get, are helpful for survival. When we're in danger, anxiety grabs our attention, keeps us alive. It motivates us and helps us stay out of or get out of harm's way. At 3 p.m., on a hike out in the woods, for example, the awareness that anxiety brings can keep you safe when you spot a poisonous snake. So anxiety is not necessarily a bad thing in the right amount at the right time. But, say at 3 a.m., when you're safe at home in bed, you don't need the alertness and anxiety you felt when you saw the poisonous snake anymore. That racing pulse and monkey mind are less welcome and pretty unhelpful now. It's not fun, this kind of anxiety, especially if it persists over a long period of time. It can occur for a lot of different reasons. Some people experience anxiety as part of an anxiety disorder, for which, of course, there is treatment. And if you're concerned you have an anxiety disorder, I encourage you to talk to your doctor or otherwise reach out for help, because there is treatment and options. Some people, most of us, probably have just periods of life that are a little more anxious than others because of something going on in our personal lives, something we're going through. And I'm willing to bet most people this year have experienced high levels of anxiety simply because of the times we're living in. The pandemic, the politics, the economy, the stress, the loss, all seem to be in sharp focus lately, causing many of us to worry more than usual. So, while yes, it is good to be alert and pay attention to what is happening in the world, this kind of vigilance can become a misuse of imagination if it goes on and on, when you allow it to take over, when you get caught up in imagining worst-case scenarios, when you feel stuck in fear, when the thing you are worried about starts to control your life, when it starts to cause you real pain, and it does. For as Mark Twain famously observed, "I have known many sorrows, most of which never happened." Now that is an active imagination. This misuse of imagination has real consequences, sometimes triggered by big events, sometimes by little everyday stuff. It hijacks our thoughts and can lead to sorrow and happiness and even despair. In her book, Radical Optimism, Beatrice Bruto says, "Our problems with unhappiness are rooted in imagination. For instance, we can interpret someone's accidental sharp tone of voice as an unfriendly reaction to ourselves. We can begin to give that person life in our imagination as someone who doesn't like us. Therefore, be on the lookout for subsequent evidence of hostility. Be ready to interpret everything that happens in that light, and of course, ourselves show distrust and unfriendliness in turn, which naturally have their effect on the other person. And so by building this thing up in our imagination, we can develop a whole atmosphere and relationship of hostility that may be completely false and unnecessary because it began from something quite accidental. Imagination is powerful. It creates our reality. But, as Bruteau suggests, we have a choice in the matter. She continues, similarly, by persistently thinking well of persons, looking for good traits in them, imagining them as pleasant and agreeable, well-disposed towards ourselves, we will enable ourselves to behave in a naturally friendly way to them and elicit friendly responses. We have a choice. We can choose whether or not to focus our thoughts on the positive or the negative. We have agency and control over how we interact with our imaginations. The first step, of course, in making this choice is simply awareness, just being aware, being fully present and noticing what is happening in the world, in your body. Some anxiety is okay. Psychologist Dr. Robert Rosen, a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Arlington, Virginia, invites us to get comfortable with this idea. For him, anxiety is nothing more than an indication that you care about something, that you're alive and paying attention, that you're engaged. In his book, Just Enough Anxiety, he says, anxiety grabs your attention. And if you're willing and able to examine what you're feeling and why, it moves you toward optimal performance and the deeper truths in your life. So some anxiety is okay. Rosen offers 10 tips for living with what he calls just enough anxiety. And these are 10 choices that you can make. First, be fully present in the moment. Distinguish what you can and can't control. Be willing to embrace the unknown. Befriend your anxiety. Cultivate self-confidence. Learn to manage your emotions. Look for the positive in every experience. Focus on your personal goal. Keep the bigger picture in mind. And finally, practice patience and persistence. Scientists and psychologists like Dr. Rosen help us to learn and live with and even thrive with just enough anxiety. The ones that stood out to me were be fully present, distinguish what you can and can't control, befriend your anxiety. Ah, that sounds hard, but I am willing to try. Look for the positive in every experience. So the science can help. But of course, I'm a preacher, not a scientist, so I'm drawn more to sacred stories when it comes to this kind of thing and when I'm trying to make sense of the world and my experiences. So I want to tell you a story. There is a Buddhist parable called The Second Arrow. The story goes that one day, the Buddha asked one of his students what would happen if he got hit by an arrow. Would it hurt? The Buddha asked. Well, yes it would, answered the student. Okay, and how about a second arrow? The Buddha asked. If you got hit with a second arrow, would that hurt as well? I'm sure it would, came the student's reply. I bet it would even hurt more than the first. The Buddha explained, in life, we cannot always control the first arrow. Sometimes bad things happen for no apparent reason, and we experience pain. But the second arrow is our reaction to the first, and that we do have control over. With the second arrow comes the possibility of choice. So a Buddhist talking about this story might explain the phenomenon by saying pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Or as the Buddha further explained, when touched with a feeling of pain, the ordinary uninstructed person's sorrows, grieves, laments, beats his breast, becomes distraught. So he feels two pains, physical and mental. Just as if they were to shoot a man with an arrow and right afterward were to shoot him with another one so that he would feel the pain of two arrows. In life, you will feel the pain of the first arrow. There are lots of real things out there happening in the world, in your life, all kinds of stuff. It's okay. It happens. It's all right to feel that pain. You should. But you don't have to feel the pain of the second arrow. You can choose what kind of relationship you want to have with it. You can choose not to be impacted by it. It starts with that awareness. Simply notice the patterns you have around that second arrow. When something bad happens and you're experiencing a negative emotion or you're processing something, start by just noticing your fear and anxiety and seeing how it's taking that turn around a familiar bend. And you can say to yourself in that moment, ah, there it is. There is that second arrow. Just notice it and you can take some of the power away from it. The Christian tradition also has a lot to say about anxiety and choice. In Philippians, for example, Paul says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." Paul wrote this passage in a letter to the congregation at Philippi from prison. Yes, he was in jail when he wrote this. He probably had a lot to be worrying about. He didn't know what was going to happen to him or if he would ever be released. But despite his dire circumstances, he says, "Do not be anxious about anything." He's not anxious. In fact, he has joy in his heart. Philippians, the whole letter rings with joy throughout, despite what's going on in his world. He tells the Philippians that they have some control over their anxiety too. In his own way, he tells them, "There may be real reasons to be afraid, but no matter what is happening, you can take a proactive response to how you respond." He suggests you can pray. You can change the way you think. You can know joy. Now, I was thinking about a couple weeks ago when we had the question box service and someone asked me if I pray and to whom. And I realized that the concept of to whom matters very little to me. As a finite, flawed human being, any concept I have of God or the holy is, of course, inadequate, woefully inadequate. I don't know if the holy can answer prayers or change the world, but I do know that prayer changes me, and that's why I do it. Prayer changes the way I think, changes my relationship to the world around me for the better. There are lots of ways to do this. If you're looking to change your relationship with how you process things in your mind with anxiety, there are lots of things you can do. Look to the scientific world. Look to Buddhism, to Christianity, or other faith traditions. There are so many entryways into this concept. But I'm willing to bet most of them all point to human agency, and all of them require practice. Which is why, of course, we call it spiritual practice. You can pray. You can meditate. You can walk the labyrinth. You can worship. You can write, you can practice mindfulness, you can be still, or you can get busy. For as author and theologian Barbara Brown Taylor suggests, moving your body. In a world of too much information about everything, bodily practices provide great relief. To make bread or love, to dig in the earth, to feed an animal or cook for a stranger, These activities require no extensive commentary, no lucid theology. All they require is someone willing to bend, to chop, reach, stir. Most of these tasks are so full of pleasure that there's no need to complicate them by calling them holy. In a world where faith is often construed as a way of thinking, bodily practices remind the willing that faith is a way of life. One of the best things you can do when you're feeling anxious is to get in touch with your body and do a body practice. So, with spiritual practices, anything you do with intention and devotion, that is, you can change the way you think. You can change your relationship with anxiety, or at least learn how to take a break from it once in a while. Beloveds, we have been through a lot this year. Many of us have been anxious and scared for months now. So I invite you to see if you can find some time this week to take a break. Just take a break from your mind for a moment. Let go of the thoughts. Release the stress, the anxiety. Make choices that increase your mental health. Rest. Connect. Find joy. Trust in the peace which passes understanding. And be well. This is my wish for you. May it be so.